gives you two choices when it throws everything at you. You can let it swallow you whole, or you take those lemons. And as the old saying goes, you turn it into sweet, delicious lemonade. And that's exactly what this podcast is all about. Welcome to Lemonade. I'm your host, Elizabeth O'Neill, and I'll be sharing the incredible stories from inspiring people who've turned the hardest times in their life, their lemons, into lemonade. Because let's be real, we all want to know how they did it, the lessons they learnt, and what life is like sipping limoncello on the other side. Let's get juicing. Monique Barry, you're here with us once again. It is a pleasure to have you. How the hell are you?
I'm good, and it's Sagittarius season. I'm feeling amazing. I'm happy to be here with you today.
Oh, me too. You've definitely lifted my vibe. When I got on this morning, Moni will attest, I was like,
yeah, you're a Sally Sansa.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I guess we'll discuss this topic. But now I've spoken to you for now 20 minutes. I feel a lot better, so thank you so much. Was your vibe so good?
You're welcome.
What have you been doing? How have you been?
Oh my God, what the fuck have I been doing? It feels like every time someone asks me what I've been doing, I'm like, let me sift through the year that is 2020 and figure out what has happened in the last few weeks. Well, I did my solo road trip. Woo! Mm-hmm. That was amazing. What else did I do? I went on a meditation retreat in the most honestly phenomenal place in the whole of the fucking wide world. It's like an energetic vortex in New Zealand. I love it. It's in Barrier Island.
Beautiful.
Barrier Island. Oh, and my friend, her family are architects. It's actually her property. So it was just divine. And I'm just wrapping up, getting ready to wrap up work for 2020 so that I can take some time off for Christmas. It's my baby's birthday soon. 5. Can't believe he's 5 soon.
Oh my gosh, a 5-year-old. Yeah. Oh, that sounds wonderful. And you feel rested after your road trip as well? Do you feel like it was good for your soul?
Yeah. Oh my God, it was the trip that I wasn't expecting, but I really, really needed. You know, I kind of had in my mind that I was going to be doing this and that and all these things. And I took all my computers and books and everything down. I didn't pick up a book once.
Yes.
I just rested. I went with the flow. It was just, it was really, you know, some days I spent, you know, I'd go down by the water or go for a walk, and I'd just spend 2 or 3 hours not doing anything, not on my phone, not reading a book, not just like enjoying.
Oh my
sitting
God.
There and thinking, and I know, which is really, it's kind of fucking weird, and definitely for me, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, so that's been me. I'm feeling good. What about you?
Oh, wonderful. It's been a big month since I think we last spoke, all about 6 weeks now. A lot has happened in Melbourne. We're out of bloody lockdown. We just got confirmed there are 0 active cases in the state. We don't have to wear masks when we go out. Like, it is just all happening in Melbourne, and everyone should just get here now because, like, it's a place to be right now. Right? You want to come and visit me, right? No, it's
so
just, it's a great vibe. It's a great vibe here. Like, everyone's like, you know, at restaurants and out and about, and just so I think everyone feels this really, this amazing collective sense of relief and accomplishment and success. Like, so it just has made this amazing, collective vibe, I guess. So it's a really exciting time to be here, and I feel really good. I feel like I've been really busy though. I feel like I've just then packed all my schedule up. So I feel a bit tired. And I feel like I can feel some old patterns kind of coming in with, I'm like, right, okay, I have to have this exact week planned, and I've got this weekend coming up, and I don't have my son, so I have to have this planned. And I had to take a bit of a deep breath and just realize I don't have to plan every inch of my life, and, you know, whatever comes, I'll be okay. It's almost this aversion to kind of sitting by myself at the moment. I think that's where that's coming from. But otherwise, like, it's just, It's a fun time. It's a fun time to be here. So yeah, you're good. What lessons have been showing up for you over since we've last spoken?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess after my trip, it would be when I came back, same sort of thing. I felt like, oh, I've been away for the last, you know, 3 weeks. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And I was really, but I didn't feel charmed to do anything. Like, nothing really felt like it was blinding me in the face. You know, I thought after I'd had all this rest, I would have so much clarity about what action to take next. But the clarity that came to me was that there was I didn't have any action to take next. I just had to continue to rest. So I really realized that a pattern that shows up for me quite a bit is that I judge myself for not doing anything. I try and fill every second of my day with something.
Yeah.
And so it's this discomfort with space. It's this discomfort with allowing myself to just rest and not valuing rest as action. And judging myself as being lazy. So it's been kind of interesting. I've been trying to let go of that and surrender to that a little bit more, because I think in the spaciousness, clarity comes. But if I'm jamming my day full of as much shit as possible and being really rigid with my routine and what I have to do and shitting on myself and all of these kinds of things, then I'm not going to have the space for the clarity to come through. And perhaps action is coming and now I'm required to rest, so that when the action does, you know, present itself to me, I'm ready for it energetically. I'm not overwhelmed and I can really deal with it. So that's been a theme that's ongoing in various shapes and forms.
I've sent you some long boxes about something quite similar. Actually, now when you were talking about that, it made me reflect. I have not been doing any therapy or anything like that over the last little while. And I just said to you, if I booked a therapy session, I have nothing to talk about right now. Like, I just feel like I'm in this, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm all healed and I'm all better and everything's now, I'm just this perfect person. It's more just like right now is this in between stage and this feeling of like, you know, I've done so much work on myself. I've learned so much. I've grown so much. And I think when you've done that in such a short amount of time, your body and your mind almost need then that time to rest and catch up and integrate that. And integrate those learnings into life. And because I have been in lockdown, I haven't had a chance to do that. So right now it just feels like I didn't have stuff to talk about. I didn't have stuff to say because there was already so much that has come out. And I don't think you want to overwhelm your system either. So it's similar to what you're saying. Like, I thought there would be this moment of, all right, now it will come a calling for my next step or what I now need to do need to talk about. What I now need to get out. But right now it's more just like, well, can you be okay in the nothingness? Can you be okay in the in-between? Can you be okay in that there's nothing right now, which is a wonderful rest? Or, you know, I think my old patterning is reverting back to being addicted to, in some sense, to the drama of the last few years. Not that, and that doesn't mean I enjoyed it, but you can become addicted to that adrenaline, the chemical high that you get from it. And now that there's nothing really happening, I think my brain is a bit like, wait, what? You know, there's nothing happening. What do you mean there's nothing happening? There has to be something happening. There has to be some kind of crisis or something going on. So, you know, it can almost feel validated. So it's just working through all that and just being okay with that in between, which I think is just as important in self-development as showing up, as doing the work, as, you know, finding all these new amazing modalities. I think that's just important as well.
Yeah.
But I
always like to remind myself that we're human beings, we're not human doings, and that, yes, of course, we have to take all of these things that we're learning and we have to make them relevant, we have to do something with them, we have to take relevant action with them. But if we're just like trying to fill the space with a whole bunch of things without any intention, without any conscious awareness of what or who or why or whatever it is that we're doing, then what's the point?
Yeah.
No point.
It's like our collective therapist. she once said to me, she's like, you know, it's all well and good to be up the mountain being the metaphor, you know, meditating and being in your cave and doing all this self-work. That, you know, there's so much merit and worth in that. But you're going to have to get down off the mountain eventually. And actually, and that kind of means, you know, you're going to have to get down and actually integrate your learnings, because it's very all well and good to listen to the next podcast, read the next self-help book, enroll in the next course. But if you're not then, integrating that into real life, if you're not getting off the mountain and actually playing it out. I guess it's like, you know, doing an exam at school or uni. You can do all the study, do all the research, do the exam, but then it's not until real life where you actually have to implement what you've learned that you know whether, you know, there's any more work to do. So I think that's really showing up for me. And as well, I think the last week, just realizing that healing isn't linear. Grief comes and goes. Things that I thought I dealt with or healed from and were done and were wrapped in a nice little neat bow, you know, can sometimes have the bow stripped off and you still feel a bit raw underneath. So I think, you know, it's just a really, it was a really, the last week has been a good lesson in just realizing that it comes in waves and things you thought you dealt with sometimes just come back up to the surface and that's okay.
But we also want to look at our things that we do. You're right, 100% right. But we want to start looking at our patterns or our themes that we are moving through as strutted, they're layered. So it's not like they've gone away and they come back and they're oscillating in and out of our lives and we haven't dealt with it. We are always dealing with them. But what we're doing is we're removing this, the top layer, and then we're moving the next layer and then the next layer. But the layers are still there, even if they aren't quite visible to us. And when our physiology is ready or when the time is right, then the layer will appear, the next layer, the more subtle, and it will just get much more subtler and subtler and subtler. Like if you were to look at something that when you first started working with it, it would have been so
dramatic,
upsetting and shocking and dramatic.
Yeah.
And then as you move through the layers and you get to much more, you know, subtler and deeper layers of the same pattern, then your response to it and your recovery from it are going to be so different. It's going to be quicker. It's not going to be as shocking. It's not going to be as distressing. It's not going to require so much time to bounce back from it. The integration period is going to be not always easy, but a lot easier. And it's really, really, it's really good to recognize that.
Yeah. And I think that is a testament to doing the work and like where I've been this year, doing so much work on myself that now when usual triggers have come up, stuff that I might have blown up your phone I'm like, oh, did I tell you this happened?
Well, this thing happened.
No. And it might not have even mattered to me. Or maybe, you know, over the last week, you know, little things have seeped in a little bit deeper than I would have liked. But it's like, oh, okay, I actually know how to sit with this now. I know how to let this out now. I know that it won't stick around forever. I know it will be okay. And I know, So I guess... Yeah. Really good point, Monique. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're so welcome. Wise. Okay, bye. you're like really surprised by that.
Wow. You're so clever. What are you doing to support yourself? Have you just been doing all the somatic therapy? Am I just giving it all away?
Yeah, well, I'm still doing my somatic therapy. I still see my somatic therapist every fortnight and I love her, and I've been doing a little bit of breath work, more pranayama than holotropic breath work. But what I have been doing is a little bit of chanting lately, which is also a little bit of somatic work. So I have been chanting every morning. I get up at 6 a.m. Now, this is not going to be sustainable forever, but I'm really enjoying it while I can. I'm trying to practice a little bit more discipline, but I've been doing the Gayatri mantra every morning as the sun comes up, which is a mantra specifically to acknowledge the sun as it's rising. Then I'll do Surya Namaskar. Yeah, it's really nice. And I'll be doing Surya Namaskar straight after that, or sun salutations, and then diving into my meditation. And tomorrow I'm about to start a 40-day Japa mantra journey, which I'm a little nervous about, but pretty excited about as well. So it's basically mantra itself is using a vocal expression, a sound, a primordial sound of nature to invoke something or support yourself through something. I hope my chart's read.
Oh, you feel, sorry, I interrupted you then. You just feel so good whenever I've done any China chanting or like kirtan.
Kirtan.
Oh, I love it. Like your whole, it's like, that's like singing a mantra, right? I think that's what kirtan is. Well, I cannot say that word. And
kirtan.
Kirtan. And my whole body is, it just like buzzes with this energy. It's something so primal and innate that I think in Western society, we don't evoke often, if at all, because we're not, how often do we get together and sing like in Eastern communities they would, but we don't. So it's really healing. It's really something really special.
It is. the intention is held in the mantra itself, because it has no meaning, like it has no literal translation, but the intention is held in the mantra. So then when you invoke that through chanting, I think the other thing it does is it creates like a natural internal rhythm, you know, like drumming or anything that is very primal. It gets you into this like natural rhythm with nature that you are sort of using your vocal cords to commune with. It's really, really cool. Anyway, so I start that tomorrow, which is an hour of chanting every day.
Oh my God, it's an hour.
It's an hour. So it's 5 rounds around my mala beads. So oh my mala gosh. Has 108 beads on it. So
you're going to be like this
40 days
guru. Like you're going to just be new Monique.
No,
after
I'm not. Yeah. So
you're
going to
swear off coffee. Really cool. You're going to swear off coffee. No, you're going to swear off sex. You're just going to swear.
I'm already there. Help me. Yes, so I had my charts read, and then she went through and saw what was going on astrologically in my charts coming up. And I move out of like, I think it's an 18-year period of Mercury in December. And so she prescribes me a specific mantra to chant and how many rounds that I need to do.
Sounds amazing.
I know. So I'm really excited for it. What about you?
Well, I went away last week for a couple of days, which is the furthest I've ventured out of 5 kilometers for months. So that was really nice. I just like this lovely level of Ollie and I just went away and had just, it was just so beautiful and just an element of freedom and nature. Mm. And so I think that, but otherwise, like I've been, yeah, as I said, I haven't been doing much any therapy or anything like that. I've just been in this real integration stage. I've been enjoying reconnecting with people and friends and eating well and looking after myself in that sense. So yeah, well, gosh, it's not much, but that's kind of it for me.
No, I was talking to you about this before and I was saying that one thing that I've noticed that you've been doing a lot lately, and you hadn't put anything together until I'd said something to you, but I noticed you've been putting yourself in some old situations, which once upon a time would have really been quite stressful for you, and really dipping your toes in a whole bunch of new things. Just it's almost like you're like, let's see how this feels. Let's see how going on a date. Oh, can I tell people you're going on a date? Let's see how going on a date feels. Let's see how meeting up in person with somebody I haven't met before feels. Let's see how hanging out with some people from my past feels. I've really noticed you've been doing that a lot. So that's kind of a bit of a pattern, a bit of a testing thing for you to see.
I didn't even realize I was doing that at all. So I like that spin. It makes sense though. I think that does make sense, but I just didn't even realize.
It's like you want to test out your new powers, your new superpowers. Let's see how I feel when I do this.
But not too much too soon. It's like
not pushing your boundaries out, you know, out of your comfort zone, but just stretching them a little bit to see how they feel.
I'd like to know what you're reading, watching, and listening as well, please.
I am reading the Tao Te Ching, and I'm finding it really interesting. I'm reading about two versions. One is by Ursula Le Guin, I'm not sure. And the other is Wayne Dyer's Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life,
I think it is. Oh, I think I've heard of that.
So both of them write essays and then they sort of like have their own interpretation of it. So that's been, I find that really, really interesting. And I try and just read like an essay, maybe a week or every couple of days rather than one a night, just powering through it and then sitting with it and writing a little bit about what I think about it. Because I think there's 82 or 42 chapters or some shit like that. But and I've been watching Schitt's Creek. I'm so fucking obsessed. I literally watched 6 seasons in about 4 days.
Everyone speaks about this show.
I love it. Everyone's like, oh, it takes a little while to get into, and it literally probably took me an entire season, and then I was like hooked. It's just good old-fashioned humor. I just love it. It's got great storylines. The characters are amazing. The costumes are amazing. Like, it's a great fucking show. And I've been listening to Joe Rogan a little bit lately because I'm really interested in the political situation going on in the US. But I find that people are either like super anti it or super pro either Trump or Biden.
It's so polarizing, isn't it?
Yeah. And Joe Rogan, I find, is relatively neutral, or has at least conversations, very intellectual conversations from both sides. And he talks to really interesting people. Listen to one, and he was talking to some dude from the CIA, and that was a great chat right around election time. So, yeah.
I am still reading because lockdown lifted, so I've been not reading much. But so I'm still reading All Our Shimmering Skies by Trent Dalton, but loving it. I am watching The Crown, and I've never watched any other seasons of The Crown until I knew that Princess Diana was in this one. This was the story about Diana and Charles. So I've been really enjoying that.
Yeah,
it just feels like I love history. But I think I was just finding it difficult to get into, I don't know, just the older seasons that maybe that I don't remember or don't look familiar for some reason. So I'd always just flick it off. But this one, you know, we all know who she was. We all know that story. So it just feels, and you just feel like you're almost in it. And I'm not listening to anything but my own podcast because I have to edit them. So we're going to do something a little bit different for this juice episode. We've got like five little mini topics. We put the call out to our followers to see what they wanted us to chat about. So we've got a few of those interspersed throughout ideas that have come up for us and things that we want to chat. So it's almost going to be like a little bit like a Q&A kind of style, I think we're feeling. So the first one we want to
That we're going to get through really quick, but we're usually
this is probably going to be broken up into like three episodes.
No, we're going to open the intention.
The intention is we're going to be quick and snappy. So the first one we want to dive into is why self-love isn't always the answer to low self-worth and the difference between acceptance and awareness. And I did have someone else come to me and say, why don't women value themselves? So in amongst that, as well as this, I think there's something to discuss here. You know, why isn't self-love always the answer to low self-worth?
Okay, so I actually think there's two parts to this, and this is coming from my own experience. I just had this aha moment. Now I'm talking really fast because I'm trying to be snappy. But anyway, I just had this aha moment on the weekend when I was taking a photo of myself in my bikini, and I realized that I always thought that self-love and accepting my body was the answer to what I thought was low self-worth. And I have thought about how much in society we try and negate low self-worth by doing all these external things to ourselves, loving on ourselves and affirmations. And I'm not saying that those don't work, but what I became really, really clear about on the weekend was that my problem never really was low self-worth. I've never looked in the mirror and been like, I really don't like my body, or I don't like this, or I don't, you know, judging myself and how I look and what I should and shouldn't be doing. I mean, there's been elements of that, but certainly that hasn't been the primary thing. I think that what I've been starting to become aware of through somatic therapy is this deeper sense of myself, my self-awareness, and my connection with my body is actually what's been off. So I've been, when I look in the mirror, it's not like I don't like myself. I look in the mirror and sometimes feel a stranger to myself, feel like a stranger to my body. I feel disconnected from my physical self. And I would look in the mirror and be like, who is this person? And really think that that person was a stranger. And before, I would have really judged that as not accepting myself or not loving myself, which I've been told by society is having low self-worth, but it's really a physical disconnection from the home that I basically, my consciousness, my higher self, my soul lives in, because through experiences with trauma and relationships and all of these things in the past, I've had to shut down myself from my body so that I can escape whatever is happening in the time. I've basically like numbed out. And then throughout my life experiences, I've used external things to numb out from my physical experience and my physical discomfort with my feelings by drinking and doing drugs or having sex or whatever it is that will take me out of my body, basically. So it's like I've spent my whole life trying to disassociate myself from my body to escape from it, even to a degree through my meditation practice. You know, my meditation practice is really meant to be expanding my awareness beyond my body, not getting me out of my body.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
That's interesting. Can I just butt in there that you, that's how I sometimes feel that when I was doing meditation a lot, which I still believe in and I still think is a wonderful tool. I think a lot of it, I was using it as a way of getting out. Like it was like this, you know, that feeling of transcending is unlike anything in the world, but my intention was to go into it and transcend, to be away from me. And I don't think that is the right intent. Well, right. I'm judging myself there. I don't think that's the healthiest of intentions to go into it. I don't think that's the purpose of it. Is that kind of what you mean? Yeah. Like, when you intention through it?
Yeah, I think it's more attachment. So I was attached to something that was outside of my body. I was attached to my transcendence. I was attached to my spiritual experience. And I'm not adhering to the human curriculum. Like, I'm not realizing that my consciousness chose to embody literally into a human physiology so that I can have both a human and a spiritual experience of the world. I was so attached to my transcendence, or that I would feel pissed off or angry when I wasn't transcending through my meditation, or frustrated, or this isn't working and what's the fucking point of this. And actually that experience of of transcendence is to experience something bigger than yourself, and then bringing that into yourself and sharing that and making that relevant with the world. And the more that you ground into that level of awareness that you are a body having an expanded experience of, you know, the universe or the world or nature around you, and then using that to take action, the more stable your foundation becomes for inner fulfillment, and the less that you need things outside of yourself to make you feel good about yourself, like bubble bath or relationships or whatever it is that you're doing to feel good about yourself and try and negate what you would quote unquote call self-hate with these self-care and self-love and self-acceptance practices.
I'm going to put a face mask on and I'm going to, you know, get my hair done, which all feel great.
And I love doing those things.
Totally. I'm getting my hair done this week. But, you know, I think you mean, what you're saying is that isn't the answer to self-hate. Is self-hate, I even don't like using that word, but you know, self-loathing isn't the answer. It isn't, the answer isn't to go in and seek external validation. Like, you know, I'm going to get a facial or my hair done, because that is just seeking for something outside of yourself. So you're not really going to get fulfillment, deep fulfillment, because your hair looks good, but it'll make you feel nice. Oh, cool. My hair looks great.
And I like doing those things. Yeah. I love doing a mask, but I like that because my individuality likes doing that, not because I think that it's actually going to change who I am and how I truly, truly, authentically feel about myself on the inside. You know, I do those things because they're fun. End of story, full stop.
What is the answer? You know, how, if someone is struggling with their sense of worth or loving or accepting themselves, what is the answer then? You know, I think all the memes and everything on Instagram shows us to go and take a bubble bath and I don't know, do your makeup and things like that. What is the answer?
I think the answer is firstly, like, very unique for every single person. Like, I can't sit here and say that you should be meditating or you should be doing therapy and journaling just because that's what works for me. But I definitely think that finding the answer to low self-worth or a greater sense of self-acceptance and awareness is a combination of both mind, body, spirit practices. So a spiritual practice, an emotional practice, so spiritual for me would have been meditation. Emotional practice for me would be therapy. And then physical practice would be something like pranayama, breath work, somatic therapy, anything that helps you really feel in your body physically a connection to your emotional and spiritual world. Find what works for you and then practice a little bit every day of, you know, however you can introduce that every day. You know, we try and, I think people oscillate in and out of these things that work for them. So they'll go, you know, full hundy on meditating and a 4-hour morning routine and therapy and going on a retreat and all of these things. And then they'll step out of it and they'll do nothing. And then they'll start feeling really, really shit again. And so then that's a trigger for them to decide, oh, fuck, you know, I'm feeling shit. I better get back into my things. But if you are sustainably and systematically dealing with these things, even if it's just like 5 minutes of journaling every day or whatever it is that you can manage on a daily basis that helps you to systematically release stress and connect in with your true self, then that would be the preferable thing to do. So you want to just keep it simple, keep it sustainable, and keep it fun. Like if it starts to feel like work, you're not going to do it. Like, we're not wired to do shit we don't like. If we're doing something we don't like, we're going against the flow of our nature and nature itself.
Our next one. This is one you can obviously tell this is my one. Yeah, you did so well then. I've got a lot of single lady friends who are all amazing, epic women. And our common complaint is that we all get together and we all say to each other, to ourselves, there are no good single men left. Where are all of the eligible single men? We've missed out. We've missed the boat. Everyone that's left are like the dregs. No, we've missed out. There are no single men left. And I think that is very common for single women to be saying. But it also, in a broader sense, goes to the heart of the stories we tell ourselves. And these are the stories that I'm telling myself. These are the stories my friends are telling themselves. First and foremost, before we pull it apart, are there any eligible single men left, Monique Barry?
Okay. So I feel like I'm going to be tough, Monique. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Short answer, like to say... We're all eligible single men. Are there any left? Of course there are. Like that is just, it's just not true to say that there's no single eligible. There's 7 billion people in this world. There's got to be one. So even just that story alone is just not true. And you're not going to find a single eligible, is it eligible?
Yeah, eligible.
Eligible single man sitting around complaining about how there's no eligible single men and that they're all dregs, because law of attraction, whatever you're putting out, whatever your underlying belief is, even if intellectually you know that that's not true, like intellectually I know that there's tons of men out there, if your unconscious belief is that there's not, and that any man that you come as a dreg or a threat even to your independence or to your safety or to even change, like we get stuck in this, like we get comfortable with our experience of being single and our freedom and our independence. And so to a degree, we can even repel like, oh God, if I really bring somebody in, then that's all going to have to change. Am I really ready for that? What if he hurts me? Like the last guy, you know, if that's the story that we keep telling ourselves and that's the energy that we're putting out, then our physiology is going to find things to prove that true. You know, if we are struggling to find someone, there's a couple of reasons why. One is that the relationship with yourself is still wounded and this causes you to remain closed off to opportunities, or someone comes along and immediately you're looking for all of the things that are wrong with them. You aren't clear what you want. How can you manifest whatever it is that you're calling in? Use your contrast for clarity. If you know what you don't want, then use that to give you clarity about what you do want. I don't like a guy with a bad attitude. Clarity would be, I like a guy with a good attitude. So place your attention on that. You feel on some level unworthy of receiving love. You think, you know, why would anybody want me? Or I'm never going to find the guy that I really need in my life, or whatever it is, the narrative that's playing in your mind. But if you feel unworthy of receiving love, then you're not going to be open to somebody when they're ready to present it to you, because you're trying to fit him into this box of what he should or shouldn't be. And the last bit is kind of what I was saying before, is that especially if you've had a traumatic breakup or really something that really shook you, and a past relationship, it can be quite vulnerable allowing yourself to feel seen again. And it can be very scary to think about that experience happening again. So we can also be really tentative, or even I've heard even friends say, you know, I'm not looking for somebody. And that might be true to a degree. We shouldn't really be looking for someone, but we also don't want to say it because we're afraid of not meeting someone. And we're just saying it to make ourselves feel better when they don't come into our life experience. Yeah. So where are all of the legible single men? Well, you're not going to find it sitting in a circle with your friends complaining about how there's none left. Of course not. It's also going to require a little bit of bravery to put yourself out there into situations where you are a little vulnerable, where you are doing something to work through whatever experiences you've had in your past relationships so you don't bleed on all your future ones, where you are open to possibilities about, you know, meeting somebody new and what that might look like. I mean, the cost of closing off from other people was intimacy and connection with those very same people. Putting walls up keeps bad shit out, but it also keeps very good, beautiful things out as well. And I think we also get attached to this idea that this guy is going to be like the one. There's a lot of responsibility that weighs on that. And it could not be that. It could be friends. It could be a work opportunity. It could be anything. You know, we just want to collect data and not be attached to that meaning anything, that person meaning anything specific about that.
I feel like that ties in really nicely to the next mini topic is that, and I know I feel like I've been experiencing that, is that when you feel like you've been disappointed a lot, or you feel like you've done all the right things and what you want still isn't coming to you. And Gabrielle Bernstein talks about this a lot, is that then you can feel disconnected from source or the universe, or disconnected from the idea that there is something greater than you supporting you. And then you almost then feel, because you feel so disconnected, you feel like you have to go it alone, or you have to, you know, there is no one out there supporting you. It's all up to you. And it's almost this very masculine, egocentric energy in that too, because it is scary to believe. It's scary to put your faith into something and just know or hope that it'll pay off. I feel like that, yeah, ties in very nicely, because I think the process of what you're talking about of letting someone in, or of allowing that process to happen, of believing that there are good, eligible single men out there, comes back to allowing yourself to relent a little bit of control of the situation. You can't control who comes in and out of your life and what they're going to be like. And then in turn, surrendering to that process. And that can be really hard when you've decided this in my timeline, I should have this now. I should have this person and it should be look like this and be like this. But again, that feels like the ego rearing its ugly head and ignoring that the whole part of this whole conversation is surrender. What does surrender mean and what does it look like?
That's 10 questions. Okay. So I think what I wanted to say as you were talking was that we think the work is trying to call the things that are aligned for us into our lives and trying to force the situation when it's not working, you know. What the real work is the practice of learning how to let go of your irrelevant beliefs and ideas about what is true, and even the belief that we have to do something in order to get something. My teacher always says to me, do less, achieve more. And that really is the core of surrender. You know, we think that surrender means doing nothing at all, though. We think that surrender means just really sitting back. We kind of think of it as the opposite of doing something. So yeah. We've got at one end of the spectrum, doing, and then at the other end of the spectrum, we think that surrender is doing nothing at all. But surrender really is having an awareness that we're trying to force something or use effort to control a situation, ultimately because we don't think or believe that we are supported by nature or that things are going to work out in our favor. So we notice that effort and we notice how much energy we're putting into it and how much stress it's causing us and frustration. And then we just let it go. We just let go of our attachment of needing to know. And yeah, it does require a lot of trust, and that is very anti-society, I suppose, because society needs proof and it needs belief and it needs something tangible and solid and real. And life just doesn't work that way, you know? We can't see the wind, but we know it's there. We can't see our child when it's in utero, but we know it's there because we can feel it. We've got so many senses that we can use. We don't need to physically see something with our eyes or touch something with our hands to know that something exists. I think this idea that we've lost faith and support from a higher source is a little bit of mistaken intellect. It's the intellect trying to
compensate, feeling
a little bit of pointlessness, you know, feeling a little bit let down. But again, it's this attachment to this idea that things have to work out in a certain way. And when it hasn't, because of course we know better than the universe, how is the universe possibly know what's good for us? So we feel a little bit, you know, feel a little bit of blues. We feel a little bit of pointlessness. You know, why am I even bothering if nature or the universe is just going to do what it's going to do? But we're always connected, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, whether we're feeling connected or not, we are connected. We are part of nature. The tree doesn't just sit outside and be like, well, I'm fucking just growing up in the sky and just getting bigger. Like, what's the point? And then I'm going to die. And, you know, we're all part of a very unique ecosystem that, and we would be naive to think that we could ever understand the complexity of that. So if we're losing faith and support from a higher source, you know, just take a moment to sit. If we can't sit with ourselves, sit in nature, like truly, truly sit in nature, in a forest, on the beach, no distractions, no devices, and just notice how you feel connected to the environment that you're in. Just notice how your sense of self starts to melt into, not away, starts to melt into the surroundings that you have around you, that you're around. And then tell me that there isn't, that you're alone. Then tell me that there's not something there. Even in our darkest moments, even in my darkest moments, I've always had this inner sense of awareness, like, please, something, anything, anyone help me. Who is that I'm talking to? You know, that is not me. I'm not talking to myself and saying, please, Monique, help yourself. I'm saying, please, something out there, help me, which means that I'm calling on that higher source. And that's in my darkest days where I'm feeling the most unsupported, when I'm wondering what the fuckery is going on. Why is shit all going wrong? Why is this happening to me? I still manage to call upon something outside of myself. And time and space give us a lot of opportunity for context. Like, if I'm to look back on all of the shit things that have ever happened in my life from my consciousness now, I 100% can see, not, it doesn't have to be about a lesson, but I can just see so much clearer as to what my story was or why that happened. And maybe it was for me, and maybe it had nothing to do with me at all. Maybe it had to do with somebody else's experience or growth or lessons or whatever the fuck it is, you know. But context comes with, you know, doing the work and being able to get yourself out of your own fucking narrative, and a little bit of time just so that you can see how it's all kind of playing out, and just being a bit more curious. I mean, I don't know if I answered the question, but
I feel like you did. I do. I give you a check for that. The next topic is friendship breakups. This one was sent in to me, and we thought it was a great one to discuss, and one that people don't talk about that much. People, you know, we talk about relationship breakdowns, but friendship breakups are their own kettle of fish. Have you had experience with this?
Yeah, they're weird.
Yeah.
Hell yes. Oh, my God. Okay. So I had this friend. We had been friends. I hope she didn't, I doubt she'd listen to anything I say. But anyway, I did have a friend that I'd been friends with forever. Like since I'm pretty sure she was at my first birthday party. And as we got older and older, I just started, every time I hung out with her, I felt bad. And I don't know if it was that back now that I can think about it, we'd changed so much. And she was really clinging onto that old version of us that did everything together. And that just made me feel so bad. Like every time I hung out with her, it was such an obligation. It was such a responsibility. And she always made me, she always guilt tripped me. You know, you need to hang out with me. You need to hang out with the other friends and blah, 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 blah. And then Bo was born and I was just tired and stressed and all of the things. I was finding myself a new mom and it was my birthday, my first birthday after my separation. And she texts me this, like, I don't know if it was a typo, but it was a nasty text. And I just was like, she'd obviously snapped. And in that moment, I fucking snapped. And I was like, I'm not going to pretend anymore. And I cut her off. I blocked her. I have not spoken to her since.
Oh, my God.
I bumped into her. I know. I bumped into her a couple of times. And I tried to fix it for a little bit afterwards. But I realized it was always about me trying to, like, not be seen as the shit person in the situation. And when I actually thought about it, I was like, hang on, we had grown apart, but we were both too chicken shit. Well, I certainly must, I can speak for myself. I was too chicken shit to acknowledge it or deal with it in an adult way. So I keep pretending and I keep pretending and I keep pretending until I couldn't pretend anymore. I had no energy left. I'd exhausted it and I fucking blew up basically. And for her, that was just completely out of the blue. As far as she knows, I was a great friend, a great friend, a great friend. And then one day just cut her off with no word. And so I'm not surprised she doesn't want to hear anything I have to say now, because in her mind, she was there for me and I was there for her until I wasn't. And I just cut her off without a word.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. It comes back to that thing of you have to accept that you'll be a villain in someone else's story. And they'll have this whole other idea of you and who you are and what you're capable of that might feel completely divorced and removed from who you actually are. And that will be in complete contrast to how someone else views you. I said that to my girlfriend last week. I'm like, you just have to be okay with the fact that people will probably, they will probably think this of you and you're going to be the villain in their story. And that's just,
I don't like everybody. So it'd be so unreasonable for me to think that everybody's going to like me. Like, I don't like everybody and that's okay. Like it doesn't mean I actively hate them and want to go out of my way to destroy them. It just means that they're not my person. And that's the end. That's it. You know,
that's the end of it. But breaking up with a friendship is hard. And I think, I think it's what you said about noticing how you feel after you're with somebody. That can be the real indicator with whether you want to spend some more time with them again, or if at all, or even for long periods of time. Sometimes you can't help that. Say that might be, you know, someone that you do have to see. I don't know, just for an example, say it could be a sibling's partner or something like that. Someone that will always be around, that you can navigate it. But other times it can be just a real, I don't know, it just kind of cut them out and just, don't have anything
anymore.
But do you have that conversation? Do you break up or do you just let it fade away?
I think the first thing that, if I was to put it into steps, the first thing that you need to do is be really honest with yourself, because I've had situations where things have not been going really great in a friendship and I'm like, hang on, do I care enough about this friendship to want to do something about it or not? So firstly, just be honest with yourself about what the friendship means to you and whether it is still life enhancing or if it's actually just not for you anymore. That's the first thing. Once you've decided that, then take action. So if you've decided that you still want to be friends with this person, potentially you've had an argument with them, then you might want to have a conversation. I've had conversations with three friends where things could have easily gone either way. And it's ultimately brought us closer where I've been like, well, this is what I've been going through. You know, when people get close to me, I tend to cut them off. I'm, you know, how have you been feeling? And that's just opened up a passageway for greater conversation in our friendships. Those three friendships are stronger than ever. They're three of my best friends. And then the other side of that is that, look, you could do one of two things when you, if you can be honest and saying like, they're not for me. One is that you can just gently bow out.
Just stop answering messages.
Which is the least, I wouldn't say just stop answering messages, but I don't know. If you want to do it, I'm going to say the chicken shit way, but I've done this way. So I've been definitely a chicken shit in certain situations. It'll just be like not replying straight away.
And not saying maybe yes, not committing to plans together,
not committing to plans, being very vague, and then eventually hoping that they get the idea. But if it's kind of like a bestie,
yeah,
or once upon a time with someone close, you kind of just have to be like, look, I really love you, but just not apologizing for the direction that your life has taken. You know, you don't need to say, oh, I'm sorry that we're not friends anymore. I'm sorry that we're not aligned. Just be like, this is the direction that I'm moving in. And these are the things that I've noticed are different about us. And, you know, I wish you well. And how they're going to take it is their responsibility. So
I think, yeah, you just want to go back to that, you know, wanting to have things in alignment with the people that you're around. You want to feel like a better version of yourself because you are friends with these people. You want to leave their company feeling, better about yourself, not worse. You want to leave their company knowing that you're supported and enriched and that you're doing the same back. It's not a one-way street. And I think if you can always tell, like I think that's always been for me, I've always said there's like tiers of friends. Like sometimes you can just have the friends that you know are just a kind of fun time that you know you can go out with, or you know, but then they're the other ones that you only
all of our friends are like, which one am I?
Yeah. But you'll only kind of go out with them, but you're not gonna tell them your deepest, darkest secrets. But then there are the ones that you know that you're only bound by gossip or bitching, or you know, that's all that you really have.
I'm not friends with people like that.
But you can kind of recognize them for what they are. Like, I don't think everyone in your life has to be your best friend. Not everyone in your life has to know everything about you. Sometimes people can just serve their purpose in your life, like you were doing back to them. I don't think there has to be this massive focus of I only have room for three people and anymore. It can sometimes be like, well, you know what? When I do run into that person, I do have a bit of a laugh. I do have a bit of a good time. Are they going to be, you know, at my wedding whenever I get married? Probably not, but that's okay as well.
When all the dud guys disappear and the real ones.
Yeah, then the eligible men show up because Monty Barry's going to coach me through all my blockages. You just wait, guys. The juice will be like featuring my new man because of Monty Barry. Now our final topic. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yes.
It's Christmas time. It's party time. It's celebration time. It's festive season.
Yeah. I love Christmas.
I do too. But not everyone does. And there are a lot of shitty parts to it because it is a big time of the year.
It is a big time of the year.
It's difficult to navigate. In-laws, family you don't want to see. Stresses, overindulgence, alcohol, all kinds of things. Festive season triggers is our final topic. How do you, what's Christmas time like for you? What's that festive season like for you?
Christmas time is very busy because it's also my son's birthday around Christmas time. And I'm a super like Christmassy person. I'm not a New Year's person. So every New Year's, I usually generally spend it on my own and I have like a beautiful evening that I do. So anyway, but my top tips for navigating festive stress would probably be realizing that no is a full sentence. You do not have to say yes to every single opportunity that comes your way. That stress comes from the expectations that we place on ourselves. So if you're feeling like if something is the really easy way to think it, if it feels like hard work, it's not flowing, then you shouldn't be doing it basically. So if you're putting this expectation on yourself that you have to have your house decked out or you have to host everybody at your house for Christmas or you have to go and visit XYZ on Christmas Day, just place your attention on each of those things. See which feels like the heaviest or the most stressful or like is causing you the most sort of like physical response in not a good way. And then let it go. Just be like, no, I can let that one go. And then you've actually got more time and energy to do the things that you love. I never, ever make commitments on Christmas Day. I always do my own thing. And if it happens to flow with other people's plans, then amazing. So we always just have Christmas Day here. Everybody usually ends up coming to my house for Christmas because I cook usually way too much food. But drinking as well is like a big thing.
People that might touch during the year probably then drink and then feel more shit about it. I think, you know, there's so much delicious food, which is amazing, and you should eat the food and enjoy it, but then don't beat yourself up after. Like, you know, I don't think we have to. Okay, Christmas isn't for indulging, but soon as January 1 hits, you know, I am on this like strict
diet. I'm going to go on a diet.
Yeah, I think it rears those
which lasts for like 10 days.
Totally. It brings up that patterning. It also brings up the idea that we have to be, I think, as mums, perfect mums, the amazing tree, the amazing decorations, the amazing food that I'm cooking. My child has to be so well behaved on Christmas because it's Christmas. You know, I think it brings up all, as you said, these expectations on yourself as a mum. Let that all go. Like, I think when I think as a kid, I loved Christmas Day. I was very fortunate, and the happiest moments I can think of is just being around family and playing with my toys and, you know, eating food with everybody. Like, they're the most simple things. Yeah. I don't remember if my cousin had a tantrum. I don't remember if not that I eat turkey now, but the turkey was in for too long, or you don't remember things like that. You don't remember, I don't know.
Yeah.
People turning up late.
If it ain't fun, it doesn't get done.
You just want to make it, you know, for your child. I think it's such a busy day as well. Like, just make sure that it's just filled with memories that, you know, you all love and that you'll all cherish and that feel really good. And I think like Ollie and I will just take it pretty easy. He'll then go to his dad in the late afternoon, which I'm so lucky. I get him Christmas Eve. I get him Christmas morning and Christmas lunch. And then he'll go. I am very lucky for that. So I know that a lot of single mums aren't as lucky like that and do have to, do one Christmas on, one Christmas off. And I think that sounds just so horrible to me, like so difficult, I should say. My heart goes out to you if you have to do that. But, you know, I think if that you're in that position, just knowing it is another day at the end of it and, you know, next year you can do something really amazing and fabulous and do something really incredible for yourself. Make sure that you're looking after yourself that day. And again, it is just another day in the end. You know, we're the ones that put all these expectations.
It's the second best day of the year.
What's the first? Your birthday?
My birthday. Just think, keep it simple. You know, I think people stress a lot about trying to balance family and work and other parts of their family and friendships. And just stop. So trying to do all the things and just do the stuff that feels really, really good for you and be okay with saying no to those things. Stop judging yourself if you're overindulging. Like, either drink or don't drink. It's as simple as that. Like, drink and enjoy it or don't drink and enjoy it. You don't have to because everybody else is. I don't drink particularly over Christmas and stuff like that. Well, I don't drink in general, but I particularly don't drink over Christmas and stuff like that just because I like to be there with my son. I like to be on for him and I like to get up early in the mornings.
Yeah.
Just figure out what you enjoy and then do that. And it's as simple as that. And
what about
expectations on yourself?
What's your advice if people have to be around toxic family members or people that family members they might not get along with, but
that they have to be around?
Yeah, that there will be people listening that don't have choice, that just have to be around certain people on Christmas. That can be really difficult.
Well, if you don't have to be around them, then 100% be okay with removing yourself and doing something that feels really good and fun for you. But if you absolutely, unavoidably have to be around these people, I would say, I'm not usually one to usually say ignore them, but I would say like focus on the things about your day that are going really well. For example, if you have kids or are really looking forward to the food that they cook, even if they're a shitty person or whatever it is, try and focus on something that is bringing you joy from the day. Because it's not just their day, it's your day as well. And don't hand your power over to them by giving them permission to disrupt your baseline foundation for having joy on that day. And if you can, try and find pockets. I used to get really overwhelmed by some of the people in my family. And so I would find pockets on my day where I could just like sneak off and sit and read a book, or go off and have a nap, or chuck on my favorite Christmas movie. Which is either Elf or, oh my God, I've just forgotten what it is. The Hugh Grant one and Keira Knightley.
Nodding.
It is love.
I don't watch Christmas movies.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Nah, not my vibe. I don't actually think
it's a Christmas movie. Anyway, everyone else who knows what it's like.
Love Actually.
You know, it doesn't. Oh, yes, it's it. I love that movie.
I don't like that movie.
Oh, what is wrong? What movies do you watch on Christmas?
None
at all.
I watched, you know what I did watch? My son went to his dad and my mom was like, have you watched Marriage Story yet? You'd really like it. I'm like, no, I haven't. And then she put it on. I'm like, let's just put it on. And then if you don't like it, we'll just turn it off. And then she left. And it's just like a marriage breakdown when they share one son. And then it's them going through like lawyers and like, it's just,
and I was just. Oh, Adele.
And I finished it bawling my goddamn freaking eyes out. And then I was in the shower, like sobbing, like heavy sobs. It was just, yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
That's how I spent last Christmas.
We watch Home Alone. You need to watch funny shit movies. You need to watch funny, not depressing stuff.
If anyone has any grim, depressing recommendations for me this Christmas, let me know.
Into the Grinch.
But I hope, you know, this is our last juice ep before Christmas. Our next one will be a 2020 wrap, which is going to come out just after Chrissy, before New Year's. So this is your Merry Christmas to the listeners, Moni. Have a wonderful
ho.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We've gone through all our topics. We hope you enjoyed this episode and this new format. We've tried to mix it up a little bit, and I will be back as normal on Monday. But yeah, you'll all see Moni in a few weeks.
Bye.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.